Greetings, venturers. Welcome to another episode of Venture Maidens, Campaign 2. It's a sexy time to be listening to the show, so we're happy that you're here. Before we jump in, obviously, we'd like to ask for a little bit of support from you guys in addition to listening to this show, which we greatly appreciate. But why don't you also give us a follow on like all the other platforms we exist on, which is Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all the things. We're everywhere, and we want you to be there with us. So give us a follow, say hi, join the conversation and the community there if you haven't already. And of course, we have to thank our lovely Patreon donors for getting us here. Emily Mayo for composing our beautiful new theme song, and Sirenscape for providing additional ambient music, which we know y'all have been digging. So thank you so much, and thank you everyone. Now, of course, we have an ad for our sponsor for today. We're going to be telling you about the Wench Bench podcast. Now, come take a seat on the Wench Bench, a podcast where two friends, Allison and a frustrated feminist, and Fonda, a positive-seeking adult, discuss fabulous fictional females. Each episode, one of the hosts covers a different woman from all kinds of media, and just a few of the characters that they've already covered is Furiosa and the wives from the Mad Max Fury Road film, Rogue from X-Men, of course, and General Kuvira from Legend of Korra, and so many more. So get ready for rants and tangents about problematic tropes, the evils of capitalism, the importance of representation, nestled in amongst fangirling, nerding out, and celebrating characters we all love. You can find the Wench Bench wherever podcasts can be found, as well as Twitter and Instagram at Wench Bench Pod. And now for what happened last time on Venture Maidens. Our heroes return to the unnamed outpost with a newly cured Winnie in tow. They parted ways with Rook, who promised to return in a few days' time. Lou experienced her first nightmare, and the day didn't get much better as a Carillon named Whistler arrived to interrogate everyone involved in the Fae incident, like the big swinging dick that he is. And all three of our crew were feeling the pressure to get lost when Rook finally returned. In the middle of the night, the Fae Hunter caught Tony's attention to reveal her ride, an animated cabin supported by a pair of gigantic chicken legs. And that's what happened. So, thank you guys so much for listening. Now, let's jump into the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. While fleeing Acheron's wrath, our heroes must take a new path. To the unknown our party now heads, sheltered by a curious homestead. Cozy up close to hear Campaign 2, Episode 5, Home to Roost.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome. It's another episode of the Venture Maidens podcast. We are so, so thrilled to be here. Episode 5 of Campaign 2. For those of you who are new, welcome. This is the Venture Maidens. We are in D&D 5th edition actual play stream that converts to a podcast that publishes new episodes every Sunday, playing in a homebrew setting that will be detailed in the Venture Maidens campaign guide, which is coming out, the PDF version, in January. So, shit, that's happening really soon. So if you really like what you're seeing here, you can find a lot of good stuff all around. But yeah, hey everybody, how are we all doing tonight? Ready for episode 5?
Oh, yeah.
Some good stuff happened last time. Some scary stuff. We met some new people.
I didn't like them.
Yeah. We don't need to make any more friends.
No more friends. I like all the friends I have. No more NPCs. Thank you. Everybody, great. Well, I guess on that note, let's go ahead and dive in here. Hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Konowich, and tonight I will be your dungeon master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Luveri Sath, your drow rogue.
Hi, people. I'm Nassim. I'm playing Tony Silvertail, your half-orc fighter.
And I am Sage, and I am going to be your lovely bard, Aoife Flannery.
Yay! Oh, man. I feel like we're at this very sweet point in a campaign where we all are starting to, like, get a handle on each other and things are really picking up. You've done some heroic-ass shit. Some problems have come your way. So I'm feeling really good. Really good about episode 5.
Hell yeah.
I'm feeling really good for, like, an HGTV-inspired episode with our new real estate prospects.
Oh, hell yeah. We are definitely gonna need some hardcore, you know, fan art, some Sims playthroughs recreating what's about to happen probably in this episode.
Yeah. Yes.
So, just so you all know. But anyway, well, yeah, we shouldn't dance around it. Oh, no particular content warnings for tonight's episode. This is a very adult stream, so we swear a lot and are fucking rad and deal with it. That's it, but no specific content warnings. But with that, so the last moment of the last game was, Tony, you had been kind of camped up in this tree all night just waiting for Rook to come back. You had your stuff ready to go just in case things got squirrely, which Captain Imdra had indicated, like, maybe it would be better if you and your friends moved along for a while. It might be easier on you than dealing with this Corellan thing. So with that in mind, you had camped out, waited. Eventually, Rook, as promised, had come right at that 3-day mark. She had showed up, flagged down your attention. You had noticed she had changed a little bit from last time you had seen her. She looks older, taller, more like a 13-year-old kid than the 10-year-old kid you first encountered before. But you hadn't had a lot of time to consider that before she asked you to army crawl over some hills, asked you to rub some weird, pasty, nasty-smelling stuff on your eyeballs. The world had gotten real shiny, and then as you crested a ridge, you had seen this thing in front of you, this hut suspended on these big scaly chicken legs with these beautiful, like, green and blue feathers decorating around this house. And right now, you, in this moment, you see the house is looking down at you, not because it has eyes, but it's one of those things when you look at a house and the structure of, like, the windows and the door, it very clearly looks like a face. As you see the candle lights of inside, as these two orange eyes are glaring down at you, and Rook had turned over to you and said, "It's cool, right?"
Oh, this is yours? She's like looking at it, trying to like see inside of it at all. What can she glean?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this is sort of my ride. I, you know, won it or whatever. But yeah, I was thinking, I mean, this is the best way to get kind of anywhere. So, you know, you seem interested at least in coming along and, you know, helping me or whatever. So I guess, yeah, if your friends are cool.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, we can use this to just get the hell out of here.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure they're down. We should go get them, and we should probably leave as soon as possible.
All right, the Corellan?
Yeah. Did you see him?
No, you mentioned it. Actually, I don't think you told me their name. Just, I might know them.
Yeah. Whistler. Has, like kind of Western cowboy hat. Has, I don't know, some unshaven, unkept. Kind of an ass. No, he's an ass.
Tony, make me an insight check.
14.
Okay. Rook nods her head along. She's like, I'm pretty sure I've heard of him. You don't notice anything particular. Okay, well, should I wait here and you go get them? Or should I come with you? How much trouble are you in?
I mean, we're not really in trouble. He just wanted to keep talking to us about, you know, how we got Winnie back to the way she was. I can go get them. Do I need to tell them to rub mud on their face?
Oh, it's... Mud won't do that. it's a special, and she takes out like a tiny little jar and from her pocket and kind of waves that. It's sort of like a magic thing. So no, I mean, no, actually, no, that would be hilarious. So yes, you have to rub mud on your face before they get here.
I mean, sure, I don't, like, I kind of went along with whatever the hell you told me. Did I not need to do this? Were you fucking with me?
No, 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 you really do. They won't be able to see it until they have this on. Not until you've been bonded to the house, but that's a whole other thing. But, like,
do I need to bond with it?
Oh, you cannot do that here. That's like a whole thing with like a bunch of rituals and big stinky things. And if we get going, we're gonna go get the stuff to do that.
Word.
But right now, I just we need to sort of
got it.
It's a whole big magic thing.
Yeah. Okay. So looking forward to that.
Good.
I'll be back. I'll go grab them.
Okay.
All
right. You don't need me to like. And she like takes out some daggers and waves them around. Like, making stabby motions.
No, 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 no. No, dude, we're not in trouble. We're not in any trouble. We'll just be, like, heading out for, you know, dinner supplies or something. But if we're not back, I guess, within an hour, maybe come with those knives?
I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll just wait here, standing in a field. While this chicken hut now, you see it's ruffling its feathers and kind of flexing its legs at this point, as if it's not really sure what to think about you. Mm.
She's kind of still staring in awe of it with her head over her shoulder while she's walking mm-hmm. the opposite direction.
It's very odd. You can tell the house is looking at you, even though it has no eyes.
Mm-hmm. But there are vibes.
It's probably pretty eerie. Yeah. The vibes. Oh, the vibes are there.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I guess I'll meet you back here soon.
Okay. She waves a hand, stands very awkwardly. The awkward way that only 13-year-olds, only preteens can stand in this field.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
13-year-olds with daggers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I got big knives.
And I cannot lie.
Yeah. So Tony, what is the plan of action here?
It would be to stealthily make her way back into the camp and find Aoife and Lou to try and get our belongings and get going.
Yeah, so by the time Whistler arrived, it was evening ish. So we're rolling now into like, Whistler arrived and then you hung out for a while. He's been questioning people. So now it's like 7, 8. So night is falling officially. So people are out and about in their nighttime activities. It wouldn't be too weird for you at this point to mingle, to go talk to people. So as long as you're cool about what you're doing, it's not too suspicious.
Okay. Then maybe not stealthily. Just, you know, being chill, walking around. At least trying to have like
not a drawing any attention.
Yeah. Have some kind of knowledge of where Whistler's whereabouts are. Is he still, like, in his tent questioning folks?
Yeah, so he took over Captain Imdra's tent. And you can very quickly glean from your comrades that Whistler is basically not left. He's ordered food to be delivered to him in the tent. He has occasionally called other people in to interview them. He seems to have talked to a great many people in camp in the time, in the hours between when you were interviewed and basically have been sitting on the tree on the edge of town.
Then, yeah, I guess I'll just ask around, hey, if I happen to see Bashar, my squad mate around, and ask him, like, hey, have you had Bashar and Doreen, yeah, if they're around, be like, hey, has anyone seen Chef Lou or Aoife? Hey, I just need to get some stuff from them.
Yeah, and, you know, Bashar will say, like, yeah, I think they're floating around, but you okay? I hear that Whistler guy's kind of an asshole. He hasn't talked to me or Doreen yet, but he's basically talking to everyone in camp at this point. He seems to think we all are involved in some kind of, I don't know, some fae, I don't know.
He thinks everything's a fucking fae conspiracy. Yeah, I mean, they're always suspicious about everyone because they think they're the only ones who know what they're doing. Just, you know, yeah. try not to get on his bad side and just stay away from him as much as you can. Finish your time and hopefully you're out of this settlement soon, because... But I think he'll be gone sooner than later.
Ugh, I hope so. It's weird. Yeah. It's weird around here. You know, weird energy.
Yeah. Now that he's here, especially.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I saw Lou. Where would you be, Lou, around this time of day? It's like 7, 8.
Yeah. Lou's usually in the kitchen tent. I think that since their last talk, she's been kind of putting off tasks to other people more and, like, just sitting at, like, the little table, like, kind of, like, writing lists and, like, to-dos just in case they do
recipes,
end up leaving.
Order lists. This is what we do. Yeah.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah, so Lou is very easy to find, I think, in the back kitchens. And Aoife, what have you been up to now at this point? I know last time I think you were finishing a bunch of projects, right after that interview. Yeah.
Yes, after she had finished up as much work as she could get done for the camp, basically she has been working on a set of clothes for Rook, not knowing now that she has already grown. But that's what she's doing.
Kids, man, they're growing out of everything you get them.
I know. She's grown like maybe 4 inches, put on about 15 pounds.
Yeah. Ooh.
The gap from 10 to 13 is significant age-wise.
Definitely. But she is trying to basically get everything in order for like her to-go bag.
Yeah. Okay. So, then Aoife then has been spotted drifting around the tent. And then Lou is in the back of the kitchen.
All right. Back of the kitchen it is. Before I leave Bashar and Dorian, though, I'll be like, hey, if you happen to get any mail for me in the meantime, would you mind just holding on to it for a little bit? And then I'll you know, come find you. I just have to run out on a few errands that Captain laid out for me, so.
Yeah, and Doreen is like, what? Why? You know, you're leaving. You can't leave.
No, I'm not leaving. I might be gone for like a night or two. So if there's any mail, just hold on to it. I'll be back.
Well, where are you going? We weren't assigned anywhere. Why do you get to go? It's because I was too slow, wasn't it? Because I was tired. I didn't say I was tired, but I was like sweating and I was really nasty. And I just knew that Imdra could tell.
Well, Doreen, you're going to get plenty of missions, or you're going to go out. And at some point, you got to go out by yourself, like I am now. So you're going to have to get used to this.
She looks at you, you know, again, with those big eyes, just full of regret for signing up for the military.
You'll be fine.
We've all worked
with
a Doreen.
You've gotten stronger every day. You'll be great.
Okay, well, have fun, I guess. Look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah.
Don't forget about us.
I won't. Okay. Gives her like a noogie.
Yeah. Oh, God, stop. She fixes her braids. All right. Yeah. And then you can certainly head back. People don't stop you as you head back. Things are so chaotic right now because all these people that Lou has been training up are now trying to deal with the dinner rush. So it's like... I don't know. It's like soup plantation night right after they've hired all their employees. If that's a very specific San Diego reference. Or like hometown buffet. You know, that kind of...
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
Big chain restaurant after a new wave of hires. So you can just creep around that chaos and go back into the back area.
Okay. Peeping in. Lou, it's Tony. You around?
Oh, yeah. Come in. And she's like... meticulously like wrapping a cast iron skillet and like a pot and like separating like sourdough starters into two jars, like just
this is the reliable one and this is the fun one.
what's going on?
So you know, she looks around, makes sure nothing's around.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like anyone's around.
Rook is around. We have a ride out of here for that mission she invited us on. And I think it's about time we head out of here. Grab your fun, go. So do you have your stuff? Would you be ready to go pretty soon?
Yeah, I'm ready. But if you could help me, cast iron is really the best because it really distributes the heat. It's very fucking heavy.
I mean, sure, we'll grab like a couple, just like one or two.
Like four,
you know. And the Dutch oven.
All right. All right. I mean, I haven't.
Two.
I haven't been in her place, so I don't know. She's got to be stocked somehow. She's traveling all this time, so.
Yeah, you think a 13-year-old kid has a sick cast iron pot collection?
Collection. You know,
perfectly seasoned.
The house might have good taste. She's growing fast. She's maturing fast.
Also, we know she's no regular 13. I mean, 8-year-old.
Yeah. But yeah, so she'll just be like, okay. She'll take like a moderately sized Dutch oven, definitely not like the cauldron of a beast that she uses normally. Mm-hmm. And then her skillet, and then just like, she has like a very nice, like small chest that is filled with spices, and her sourdough starter. And that is the bare minimum that she will leave with.
The bare minimum.
Oh. All right. I've got all your stuff. We're good to go. Let's go grab Aoife.
Okay.
To head on over. And Aoife, what do they find you in the middle of when they show up?
You see Aoife has a stack of, like, recently repaired canvas sacks, like, just towering in her arms. She's very awkwardly trying to hand off to this, like, really, like, acne-faced boy who they're just having the most, like, horrendous, awkward exchange ever as she's, like, trying to hit this stack of paper.
Oh, no. I don't know if I got them all.
Just hold still. I'll tie them to you. She'll take one. She'll like wrap around his super skinny body.
Yeah, so I was thinking, Aoife, if you're not doing anything later, maybe we should get a drink sometime.
Sure, let's get that drink tomorrow.
Okay, great. I'll just take these over, you know.
Yeah, right over there. And she'll give a little pat on the butt, like, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll get going.
Okay. There you go, kid. It'll put hairs on your chest.
Oh, boy. So you both approach as Aoife finishes this exchange.
Hello there, little heartbreaker.
Oh, Timmy's fine.
Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, well, Jimmy may not be fine when he comes back and sees that you're not here. Because we gotta leaving? Go. Yeah.
Okay, I have my stuff. And she'll, like, dive into the tent and she'll come up with, like, big, like, ridiculous, like, crocheted backpack, basically, full of stuff. And you see, like, knitting needles are, like, poking out of the top end. And there's, like dangling from the sides on the outside are just, like, skeins of yarns of different colors.
Oh, wow. This is, like, a travel pack yarn store disaster. I love it.
Yes. About the most dysfunctional sack I've ever seen.
Oh, I've had this thing. It's the first thing I ever made.
Well, it's charming.
Oh, we can tell. Yeah.
Oh yeah, she does. And so be like, all right, I am ready to go. Let's go.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's go. We gotta head back out through the camp, so maybe let's keep our distance from one. I mean, I know it's kind of hectic outside, but let's not, you know, storm out of here. We're casual.
Oh, yeah, you know.
We're casual.
Totes cash, got it.
Okay, totes cash, what kind of skills would you all like to use individually as you totes cash make your way out of camp?
Petition to have a casual skill check in D&D.
I think that would be persuasion,
maybe? Oh, no.
Or performance.
Performance.
Aoife will definitely be doing a performance as she's like chatting to everyone.
Yeah, Lou, you could totally do stealth just to be unavoided. It's whatever you all think your characters would do to just get out of this party.
It's more of like a sleight of hand than a stealth, just trying to juggle all this shit that she's bringing with her, not letting like it drop and not being too obvious about it.
Okay. I will accept. I will accept it.
16.
Okay. Lou, 16. Aoife, what did you get? I'm sure your performance is ridiculous.
she got a 14 for her performance.
Okay. And Tony, what are you using to just slide on out of here?
I don't know. I kind of want to argue that, like, she's probably just mimicking the behavior of everyone else being a little bit chaotic around and being already in her soldier garb. It's probably a lot easier for her to blend in. So I don't even know what skill to use for that, but I kind of want to argue that she doesn't need to.
Sure. I think Tony, you're probably used to walking with purpose through things. I will accept that. I think this is your natural element. You are a military person in a military camp, so I will accept it. So you all make your individual paths and ways and find yourself outside officially of this rapidly erecting like wall that is enclosing this area here in this field next to kind of this tree that Tony was posted up in, which is pretty much the only scraggly tree for about half a mile until you get to the tropical forest proper. So you're standing here now on this muddy ground. And Tony, for you, this whole time, it's been really weird because the minute you put that stuff on your eyes that Rook gave you, again, it's like you're seeing the aura around everything. It's like if you're looking at things with your eyes squinted, the way light travels around things, it's all very shiny and strange. And that effect is now starting to dissipate a little bit for you.
Hmm.
But yeah, you're here in this moment and you all hear like a whistle come from a couple of these rigid hills over, a bird call.
We didn't talk about a call, but I'll try to mimic it and return it.
And Rook will pop up over a couple hills and go, "That was terrible. That was just really awful. We're going to have to work on a signal if this is ever going to work."
We never talked about a signal, but yeah, fine.
That's like basic. Whatever. Okay, so you all ready to go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. These guys need a... you know, mud up for a second.
Well, where are the horses, though? You said there was transportation.
Yeah. No, come here and rub this on your eyes and don't smell it too much.
Well, before my hands get really gross and you can see, like, Aoife is, like, sizing up Rook now, like, clearly looking at her, like, moving around. And, like,
she looks
like
different. Lou and Aoife, you're both like, whoa, significantly different than before. Again, the baby fat has receded. Her features have kind of smoothed out. She's taller, awkwardly tall, you would say now at this point.
And Aoife is like, just like, I hope these will still fit. And then she'll, dig into her big giant knapsack and will pull out a set of clothes and hand them to Rook and will be like, "Well, I made these for you so that they would fit you, but you seem to have a growth spurt. So I hope they still fit you. It should be fine. I can let them out. It's fine."
And Rook seems totally taken aback by this, and she looks down at the clothes and looks up at you, and all of you don't need any kind of skill to see, like, Rook looks panicked and confused and says, "What do you want for these? I didn't ask you for these."
"Oh, no, I don't want anything. I mean, you're letting us ride off with you, which is, you know, that's, you know, quite good, but, you know, I thought you might like in, you know, wearing something that fits you, because, I mean, I know, like, I'm the eldest, so I've had to deal with my siblings' hand-me-downs and giving them off their, you know, whole lives, and, you know."
And she's shaking her head, like, "No," and she's like, I don't know you well enough to accept this, okay?" And she kind of just throws them back at you into the middle of your chest in a very strange, panicked gesture.
She's like, I know I'm a fae and shit, but... And she'll take them and she'll, like, stuff them angrily into her bag. And, like, will huff over to Lou.
Lou just kind of, like, pats her back and she's like, they were really nice garments. Maybe later. Maybe she'll shrink again.
Yeah, and I mean, you see that Rook... Maybe if you want to make an insight check now, Aoife, on it, like, now that the initial reaction has passed, to try and figure out what the hell's going on.
Ooh, that's pretty good. That is a 16.
Okay. So as you're looking at Rook and dealing with it, because she's still really panic is primarily, and fear is what her response is to you trying to give her a gift. You're not sure exactly what that is, but... You don't think it has necessarily anything to do with the fact that you are a satyr. It's just the whole concept of gift giving seems to have wigged her out completely. And she's just shutting down. She doesn't even understand how to react in this situation. Which is definitely not a normal, like, people from the plains don't react like this to gifts. So this is very odd.
We can revisit that. But the horses... Where? We have a ride, so...
Wait, why do we have to put this shit in our eyes?
That
I'm not putting that shit on my eyes.
That's the whole thing. You have to do... Tony, tell them.
Oh, you do this, and then you bond with the transportation.
You don't bond with it, but you can see it. You can see it when you put the stuff on your eyes.
And then we need to bond with it.
Yes,
but you need this to see it because it's really cool. It's really, can I still see it even though the thing is wearing off? Can Tony still see it?
You cannot see it now. You have to walk over a couple hills, but presumably you could see it.
Mm-hmm.
Lou will take the vial and give it a whiff and just.
Oh, that was a mistake. You have smelled chicken shit before, and this is absolutely what it is.
I'm not putting that on my eyes. Are you kidding
you
me?
You have to, otherwise you can't see it, and you can't get on it, and then we can't escape, and then Whistler will get you, and it'll be a whole thing. Oh, come on. You're all going to help me hunt Faye. If you can't even do this, you're never going to last. Not even one day.
My nose is very delicate. It's the one thing. Okay,
Okay. Tony's gonna grab it and rub it on their face. Can I do like a strength or whatever to do it for them?
I don't know. It depends. Lou, are you resisting that? Tony sticks a big finger in the poop and like tries to come at your eye.
Literal poop. She's gonna dodge out of the way.
Okay, let's do a, a post-grapple checks. So, Tony, that'll be a strength. 19. So, an athletics versus an acrobatics, Lou, I'm assuming.
I got an 18. I get poop-eyed. I'm going to get pink eye for sure.
It's a struggle to the death, but, Lou, you end up, like, as, like, just, you know, a finger jams into your eye and kind of smears it around. It's worse that you struggled, because now there's some of it in your eye, which is so much worse than just on your eyelids. But there you go.
Walk. Go. You'll see it. You'll forget about it.
Yeah. You experience that same weird effect that Tony has where everything seems really shiny and you can just see rainbow auras around everything. It's wild.
Does my puke have a rainbow aura?
Oh, do you puke?
Yeah, she absolutely pukes. She's such a puss.
Your puke does too. Everything does. Aww. Everything does.
That's the cutest puke I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's kind of sparkly.
Tony moves to go and do it for Aoife as well, but gives her an opportunity to be like, nah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aoife, like, swats your hands away, like, in that, like, very sibling sort of gesture of, like, get the fuck away from me. And she'll big inhale and hold her breath and smear shit on her face.
Yay! Those are my adventures! And then Rook is just watching this all, like, okay, let's head on over. Great job, I guess.
This isn't what I look for in getting shit-faced.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the opposite of all the fun of being shit-faced.
She told you not to smell it.
I did. I did tell you not to smell it, and you did it anyway, so it would have been better if you just listened to me without question from now on, honestly. Like Tony. She questions literally nothing. She's great.
Tony!
Hey, I mean, I feel like we've bonded at this point. We got sucked underground together. You followed me, had me rub chicken shit on my eyes, and I'm still alive. So what do I have to complain about?
It is chicken shit. You're right. But it's from the house, so that's why you can see it. Come on.
You know what? It's totally worth it. It's totally worth it.
Oh, my God. All right.
So you follow after Rook and Tony, who seem to know where they're going, and you all suddenly see it. This house suspended up on these two legs. Now, it's squatted down a little bit lower, as if it's waiting for you all, but it perks back up to attention when you all look at it. And it turns to you. You know, it's painted shutters, which are white with these beautiful little flower patterns, very like cottagecore, swing open, and you see the glowing orange lights again, staring at you all.
Aoife, this is what I was talking about. This is the opposite end of shit magic. Look at this fucking thing. I mean, we have shit on our eyes, but I mean, other than that, this is incredible.
And Aoife has her mouth just like completely just agape. And she's just like, oh my God, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen. And she's just like running to it. And then it's like, and then takes like four steps and it's like, and like stops.
Yeah, because
like,
the chicken takes a step back too. The legs don't really know. It's not aggressive. It seems afraid of you as you get closer. So the house steps back a little bit and looks down directly at you.
Then yeah, she'll slow to a very gentle and like creeping halt with her hands up. It's like, oh my God, what's your name? Do you talk? Are you real?
The house can't talk. It's like a chicken house, Rook says. And is like, okay, you know what? Come on, we're just down, she says, and points at the house, and points at the ground. Down! And the house folds its legs underneath itself like a hen that is roosting and whoosh, kind of crashes down, leaving now the door about a 5-foot jump up from the ground. So it's much more accessible to reach. So, and you can see this painted blue, like powder blue door. It looks very cute with, you know, the white paint on the house with all these little decorative flower details. And the shutters close again. And the house seems to, from a distance, you could probably mistake it for a normal house at this point.
Tony wants to barrel right the fuck in there and, like, swings open the front door, gives it, like, a little pat, like, I'm coming in. Mm-hmm. And wants to enter.
Yeah, so you do, and you throw open this door, and you see a very quaint living room inside. It looks very similar to those like Airbnb log cabin experiences that you might see. So it's like luxury Airbnb where everything is, oh, it's nice and quaint and wood inside. And you see a roaring fireplace, a mantle that is decorated with all kinds of house plants and gourds that have been artistically arranged. The space has lots of very comfortable but chic furniture spaced all around it. You can immediately see that to the right, there's a very open kitchen that has one of those windows so people in the kitchen can look onto the living room for entertaining with like a little counter. You see that there is a hallway that leads off into the back that has several doors around it, as well as a set of steps leading upwards. And right now, there are candles that have been arranged around the room to give a very pleasing atmosphere. The fire is lit. There's nice rugs on the floor. It's a truly beautiful, cozy little space.
Yeah, I would make the shit out of this place on Sims. Mm-hmm. Or even yes. My software at work, because I work for West Elm, and we have room planners. Damn. I could build this shit at work.
Listen, cottage core living or whatever the hell it's called, that expansion just came out on Sims. So many chickens.
Oh, shit. All right.
I think Lou just, like, comes in and immediately just, like, arms out of my way, is like, look at this kitchen. And like takes all of her assortment of stuff and just like looks around and sets it down. She's like, I'm never leaving. You will not be able to get me out of this place. Tony, how did you keep this secret the entire time you were talking to us? I would have immediately just...
I haven't been inside this place yet. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't have come back if I had.
Oh,
well, that's good to know.
I just saw it, was like, holy shit, it's amazing. I gotta go get them. And brought you straight over here. But Tony wants to run in and immediately look for the biggest bedroom, because she gonna need it. I've been living on a cot in a tent for like 5 years, so I am done, and I'm in a house now, so give me the biggest fucking bedroom there is.
Oh my god, yeah, Aoife is just like screaming and pointing at everything and just like in utter delight, like everything. She's just so taken aback by every single little detail, and she has never had her own bedroom before, so this is an insane experience.
Well, hopefully there's room for us to each have our own bedroom. It is small, so we may have to share, everybody, but I'm fine with sleeping on the floor if need be.
Is the house on chicken legs? Are you telling me there aren't any magic secret rooms we can't just like add here? We gotta sleep on the floor? I don't think so.
I've never been in a chicken house. Maybe that's the caveat, is it's all magic and fun, but you have to sleep on the fucking floor.
But it is the size of a chicken. No. So Rook scrambles up after you all and immediately does that thing of a person who has lived alone for a while and is way too comfortable with that. Just takes off like her muddy cloak and armor and kind of throws her weapons on the floor around the door, just and lounges down into one of these chairs and says, no, there's, I mean, that, yeah, the house is like super magical. So it's, I don't know, what do you want? Open up a door.
What do I want? I mean, look at this kitchen. What do I want? There's more.
Told you didn't need all your goddamn cast iron shit.
Listen, I have seasoned these to perfection. I don't care how magical this place is. It's not going to be the same.
Oh, there's a kitchen?
You mean there wasn't a kitchen? What did you eat? What did you eat?
Do you eat?
Yeah, like mushrooms and stuff and snacks.
Oh,
what
honey.
Do you eat?
I'm going to... And she just starts, like, taking out, like, some of her knives in this kitchen and, like starts, like, taking just, like, she brought, like, fundamentals in her oversized backpack and is like, hold on, and just starts
Rook,
cooking.
Yeah, follows you with genuine curiosity as she pokes her head into the kitchen and looks in wonder around going, this definitely wasn't here before. So, I don't know.
I love this place.
Yeah, it's sort of, I just kind of open up things and they're there if I need them. So my room's upstairs and it's kind of my space. So like, while it's all great and cool that you all work for me or whatever, I'd really like if you didn't go in my room.
All right, boss, as long as I get to live here. Just keeps like, oh, like opens up a drawer and is like thinking to herself, like, bacon.
It is a fucking magically refrigerated door that has cured slices of bacon on ice, perfect temperature for preservation. And it's that thick cut good shit, not any of that rations you've been dealing with.
A literal tear falls down her cheek.
Rook's like, you're being really weird about this kitchen.
It's fine. I have one thing. This is it. Just let me have it.
And Rook will look back at Aoife and Tony like, I don't know what to do here. So, yeah, I guess if you want to open a door.
I get my own room? Like a whole room that's just for me. That no one else can go into unless I invite them in.
Yeah, those are the rules for my room. So if you can understand that, that's good.
Oh, yeah, that's what I've been praying for my whole feckin' life. And she's going to run immediately down the hallway and just throw open the first door she finds.
Aoife, what did you hope in your heart that a bedroom made just for you would look like?
Oh, man.
Maybe you didn't even consciously know what it was, but this door opens onto what your heart desires.
So she throws open this door and you see this bedroom where everything is just white and pink. It's pink walls with a white ceiling with a white, like, canopy bed with the pink netting over it. And over in the corner is an area where that's like the perfect shelving system to store all of her arts and crafts things.
There's like so many pegboards and they all have, oh, they're perfect. They're beautiful.
Like perfect arrays of bobbins and basically, and like a hand crank sewing machine. And did she like, and a big chest that's full of crocheted throws.
Yeah, so that's what you see when you open up this door. What does Aoife do?
She just, like her shoulders just, like, drop so low that her bag just, like, falls off of her body, like, onto the ground, and stuff just, like, spills out, and she goes and she just belly flops onto the bed and, like, bounces a couple times and just, like, grabs the pillow and is rolling around with it, like, clenched to her chest, and she's like, it's my own room?
Oh, this is so sweet.
So cute.
And Tony, what I think Rook will see this, take this all in stride, decide she wants none of it, and goes back to, she's gonna, I guess, go into the kitchen now and kind of look around confused until she finds one of these ice drawers, Lou. And sort of shoves you out of the side and opens it up. And there's going to be like a big glass container with an amber colored liquid in it. She'll take it out, find a glass, pour a very tall drink for herself and go sit by the fireplace in one of these big chairs.
The last vial you had was shit. What is that? Piss?
No, this is booze. Obviously, why would I drink piss? No, I figured, I mean, now we have a kitchen, I guess. It never really occurred to me, but, you know. I was like, oh, some meat would be good, or whatever.
Okay, well, that changes everything. If you're having meat, I have to totally restart this dinner. I was thinking wine, but how old are you again?
How old are you?
90-something.
Cool, that's good for you. And she goes and sits over in her chair.
Okay, well, it's gonna taste totally different when you're having it with my dinner, okay? Just don't, you know, I trust you. Keep it in the house.
Whatever. Sip comes from the living room. So, Tony, are you throwing open a door?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. She runs in wanting to find, like, the biggest bedroom she can after living on a cot and in a tent for, like, 5 years, but is a little surprised / so happy to open a door to what is pretty much identical to her yurt on her family's land that they kind of like unpack and rebuild every time they move around. It's just on a bigger scale because she was 5 years younger and has grown like a full foot since she left home.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's
and it's
very,
all yours now too.
Yeah, it's a lot of like it's a very round room, wood beams and a large mattress with like lambskins, sheepskins, things like that. A lot of animal
furs and coats around, like lining the floor and the walls, even some horseshoes on the walls, a couple plants in there already that she immediately runs over to inspect and like check on their health, and then notices that the drawing the drawing that Geo made of their of her horse's pony is already framed up on the wall, and she like starts to tear up a little bit, and it just kind of like lays there in bed and thinks about home for a little while.
Yeah, and I think you'll notice the plants are in really good condition, but you know that if you did something to make them a little bit better, they would get better. So it's like, they just don't have quite enough water that you know you can fix that, or like, you need to do a little more fertilizer. So it's like appealing to your mm-hmm. need to take care of plants. That's the level this house is operating on.
Oh, wow.
Things aren't perfect. Damn. They're appealing to that. And Rook lets you all do your respective things and kind of calls out eventually. So do you all have, like, no questions or... I mean, that's cool, I guess.
You can just hear Aoife calling out from her room, "You told us not to ask questions!"
Oh, well, like, now is the time to ask, so I guess you're all officially employees, or... Yeah, okay, you know what? Actually, everybody come out. Everybody come out. Everybody come out to the living room! She yells. Whatever that is, she points at Tony. Yeah, like, no, stop. Stop that.
What? It's thirsty. She's like, keep watering a plant.
Yeah, no, and Lou, what is that? Stop. Put that down.
Well, you gotta stuff the chicken, because then it won't... Okay.
Oh my god, you're making chicken! She whispers to you.
Oh! Oh, I'm so sorry! She's, like, screaming to the house. She just puts it back into the drawer. Why did you give it to me if it was not cool to eat? Fish, fish, fish!
Rook's just nodding negative with her head in her hands, like, my god.
Are you eating the house? Is that a thing?
I would never. No. I didn't. But
okay,
she...
All right, circle up, circle up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Midroll. We appreciate you all listening to our show so much, but if you want to help us out even more, you can do so by joining our Patreon. With all of our extra content, helping has never felt so good. We're talking a whole ass other podcasts, coloring book pages, magic items, modules, and more. Just $1 unlocks a treasure trove of goodies, so treat yourself today and maybe every day. Speaking of Patreon, with the creation of our campaign guide, still available for pre-orders, we have changed our next Patreon goal to commissioning an entire score of music to use in our show to make things even more emotionally charged. Just imagine it. You'll cry, you'll laugh, you'll clench, all to our very own custom tunes. Don't let our dreams be dreams, venturers. Now we've got ourselves a fantastic sponsor this episode, the Poison of Prophecy podcast. It was foretold that you would be here at this very moment, listening to this very ad copy, and even that you would consider skipping ahead a little bit. Wait, 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 wait. Stay with us just for a moment to tell of Poison of Prophecy, an actual play tabletop podcast using the Ryutama game system, aka, what if Studio Ghibli made an Oregon Trail RPG? Poison of Prophecy is a story about divination. It is an exploration of what kind of world and people that power would shape. With Norse mythology as a baseline, we've taken inspiration from Fallout and added a bit of Terry Pratchett-style humor. Together, we explore a cold but gentle frozen land. Starring Barbara Perez Marquez as Yesenia, a fortune teller, Jen Vaughn as Larkspur, a mail carrier, Paul Harpring as Clive, the mushroom farmer, and Matt Woodyard as the game master. Listen to Poison and Prophecy on the Crows Codex podcast feed, their website, crowscodex.com, and Twitter, @thecrowdex. Lastly, It has been predicted that you will leave a rating or review of Venture Maidens after you finish listening to this episode. That's all for me. Let's get back into this episode, Ventures.
Okay, and Rook indicates for you all to sit in chairs around the fireplace, and she takes a moment. Well, now that all that excitement has passed. So, great. It's all great that you all wanted to come on this journey. Cool. Fine. But I do have to insist, this isn't fun times. This isn't party fun, whatever the hell you do in the Plains or the Eldrin Empire. This, you're here to work. You understand that? My job is hunting down Fae, killing them, and collecting bounties. And all of you are going to be helping me do that. So you're here to work. Just because you took down one Fae doesn't mean you're going to make it in this industry. Okay? So don't get too full of yourselves and don't start having a good time before things get hard. Can you take the heat? She says and points a little preteen finger at you all.
Yes, chef, I am in the kitchen.
What's our cut?
Well, for now, until I get things kind of back on track, our cut is going to be evenly divided for supplies, for arms, for equipment. Because obviously all of this, and she waves at you all, this is not acceptable for fighting Fae. You're rookies right now. So we're going to head to Coven. We're going to collect our first bounty from the Taconid. We're going to get paid. We're going to get you some good shit, and we're going to get another job. Because honestly, we're probably not going to get paid very much for this one. Rinse and repeat.
Okay. Yes, okay. Copy that.
Everybody cool with that?
Yeah.
All right. So obviously, none of you have ever been to the Fae before, so there's probably going to be a big learning curve here. That's what I get for bringing on rookies. But in my situation, y'all are kind of my only options. So I guess you're cool until we get to Coven, but we'll start dealing with that as you go along. If you have any questions, I guess I can answer them.
Aoife immediately raises her hand.
Oh god, what?
What's Coven? I've never heard of that.
Coven is a neutral town in the Fae, in the wilds. It's like the only safe place you can basically go. It's ruled by witches that kind of keep everything out, so the courts can't go there.
Real witches? Witches aren't real?
Oh my god, this was a horrible mistake.
Well, okay, if we're going, I mean, I have learned some things. First things first, right, we should all come up with names for ourselves since we can't use our own names.
Yes, code names would be good.
Oh, I like
code names, yes. What, Aoife?
she's raising her hand again. Who's the Taconid?
Oh, that was the Fae we killed. I did some research on it. Basically, a hybrid bug plant thing implants itself into human hosts or, you know, mortal hosts to spawn more. Should bring in a pretty fair price. It's probably one of the Fae that's been running around from the war, so.
She raises her hand again.
Oh my god, what?
Who do you sell the Fae to? Like, why do they want bounties? Who's putting out bounties? I have so many questions. I'm so sorry.
Okay. The witches who live at Coven, right? Okay? They rule at Coven, and all around them, all these other Fae, you know, courts, it's all kinds of bullshit and politics. And so the witches need to, you know, keep things safe and protect things, make people, you know, not send, she waves a hand at Tony, you know, shit like you and your people into the wilds. So any Fae that just starts killing mortals or being a problem, there's always a pretty big bounty to collect on Fae like that. So that's what we're doing. We're gonna collect bounties. That's how I make my living. So now all of you, this is how we make our living. This is how we pay the chicken bills.
You pay bills for this chicken?
It doesn't have a face. Where's its bill?
And what does it eat if it poops?
I regret everything.
I'll only ask questions one. I won't repeat them, if you could.
So to be perfectly clear, I'm also quite new to this arrangement, but I mean, these houses are, I mean, this is premium stuff. That's why our first task, we're going to go to Coven. We're going to sell our bounty. Hopefully we're going to make enough to bond you all, to buy all the stuff, to bond you to the house so you don't have to rub the bird shit on your eyes every single time. Because this thing, it doesn't, okay, I'm not really sure how it works, but it doesn't really travel in normal space. It's like in between. It like lives on ley lines, which are like highways of magic. Right? That makes sense. And you can tell Rook to Rook, it doesn't really make sense.
I mean, I've only ever heard of vaguely something like that, but if that's, I mean, I'm in a chicken house, so sure, it makes sense, I guess, for a right? chicken house.
And it moves fast. And it's basically invisible to everybody who doesn't have that on their eyes or isn't bonded to it. So it's a super safe way to travel.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good get that now I'm hoping to, you know, sort of capitalize on. But it definitely put us a little in the red.
Did you get this from the pretty naked ladies?
No, they don't. No. Oh. No. There are a whole other thing. But anyway, no, I got it from a witch at Coven who I helped / won it from. It's a long story. But anyway, it's ours now. So,
All right. Actually, speaking of those ladies, they seem to know you. Is that any part of why you are, you know, older now? Because of them?
And she does go quiet, kind of looks at her hands. I think we'll get there, but I don't know if I want to tell you everything right now. But yes, they had a lot to do with my current predicament, which is the only reason I've considered bringing on help, to be quite frank. Mm. In my condition, I can't exactly do everything I could do before.
Sure. I mean, whenever you're interested in talking about it, that's fine. I only ask because, you know, I happen to kiss one of them, so I'm still waiting on some kind of side effect, if there are any, and that just kind of came to mind, so no pressure.
Honestly, I don't know, and that's something you all are going to have to kind of get used to for dealing with the Fae. There's some fucked up shit that happens. Their magic is nothing like what you're used to on, I guess, your normal world, whatever that's like. But it's in a whole different league. It's not predictable. It's not textbook. It's not something you can go to a library and get all the answers. You're just going to have to deal with it day by day and deal with the penalties of that.
Sick. All right. Good to know.
I mean, I wouldn't blame you if you want to, you know, quit now, but you should let me know before you're bonded to the house, because Gordon will get really upset if you leave.
She, like, reaches out and, like, touches the couch, and it's like, Gordon, I love you.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The house doesn't have a name. Gordon is the thing that takes care of it. Oh, yes. Rook says, Gordon! Gordon, come out! And you look around the room, and nothing really seems to change.
Do I have to put more shite on my eyes?
No, he's just kind of he's kind of weird. I don't think he likes me very much. What are passive perceptions? One more time, now that we're level 2.
11. No.
13.
So I think then Lou and Aoife at the same time, you would notice. So just above, there's this roaring fireplace and this mantle that's decorated with all these vines and like decorative fall gourds. And one of these pumpkins has been carved like a Jack-o'-lantern face. and it just lights up all of a sudden. Nothing else changes. There's no other movement, but the face lights up and you can see the triangular eyes and this strange smile now burning on the mantle.
Time out. You dare tell me you don't like puns and you've named a pumpkin Gordon?
I'm sorry, Rook named the pumpkin Gordon. I didn't do that. Rook enjoys puns because she's the worst. So.
Gordon! She waves.
At this lighted jack-o'-lantern now on the thing. And you all hear a. Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha. That's my name.
Coming from the jack-o'-lantern on the mantle.
Oh, look at this wee lad. Oh, he's, oh my goodness, come here.
You want me to come over there? Do you, young mortal?
Yeah.
Okay. And you see this burst of like viney growth that emerges from the bottom of this pumpkin and just trails out of the base of it, winding together to form this very eerie, like a stick figure body that's been made of vines. You see this pumpkin-headed thing crawls down from this mantle place and stands there now. It only stands about 3 feet tall as it wobbles towards you, the glowing eyes flickering dangerously as this pumpkin-headed thing stands beside your chair.
What is your name, little satyr?
Oh, you're going to be my best mucker. I just know my name's, and you see she takes a very, like, audible pause. Saoirse. And then looks at Rook like, ah, with thumbs up.
Rook gives you like a sad half-hearted thumbs up. We've definitely already said our names here, but that's okay. And this thing, it wobbles its head, flops to one side, then the other. And suddenly it moves very, very quickly. And you see the vine extends the neck of this thing like a snake. So its jack-o'-lantern eyes are staring directly into yours, about an inch away from your nose. And it says, you are not Grandmother Filth.
Oh my god, she is so fucking alarmed. Like, she goes and, like, hides behind Tony.
And yeah, it retreats. It's like snake vine head and goes, ha-ha, new guests. Have fun. And Rook is sitting there in her chair with her arms crossed.
Is Grandmother Filth who you won the house from?
Yes, and I can't seem to convince Gordon that that is true. So, on the bad days, it gets a little bad.
Can't we just tell her to tell him that it's yours when we get to Coven?
What, the house?
Is Grandmother at Coven?
Yeah, yeah, no, she is. No, he knows. He just, I don't think he's quite all there.
We all process things in our own time.
Yeah, and Gordon spreads out his vine hands and kind of waves them around. He does form them into very floppy little dancy hands and strides towards you all and says,
ah, it is so lovely to have guests again. You do all know the rules, don't you?
Did you tell us?
Yes. If you are going to live in my house, the rules are never open a door unless you are prepared to see what is inside. That is the first rule. The second rule, never let me out of the house. That rule is not mine. That is from Grandmother Phil. Three, wipe off your boots when you come inside, because mud is disgusting.
Unacceptable.
I love him so much.
That is all. Enjoy your stay.
And he pulls up all his vine limbs into himself and just a a orange pumpkin is left sitting by the fireplace on the floor with the carved face, and the lights have gone out.
Lou has like a little notebook that she carries with herself, and she just like takes out a pen slowly and writes, "No chicken, no pumpkin." And it gets up.
Now that you look around the living room, there are an awful lot of decorative pumpkins just around this space. Sort of an alarming amount, if you had to say.
Oh, no.
Tony just wants to pick up Gordon and put him back on the mantle. And then she's going to go check her bedroom to see if there are any little pumpkins in there. If there are, remove them.
Yeah. There are a couple that have been, like, artistically arranged in corners.
They can go somewhere else.
Remove them. Yeah. You put them out. You could put them back on the mantle by the front door. You swear you hear a sound when you lift them up.
Aww. Well, I don't care.
Well, I don't care. You're a nightmare. Thank you.
Oh, my. Well,
Rick's like, yeah, like I said, I don't exactly know what his deal is. I'm pretty new here, too. But he's clearly bound to the house and not super happy about it. So I really suggest we follow rule two.
Mm-hmm.
Again, gotcha. Grandmother Filth, she's sort of an alcoholic, so it's hard to really get the full story about anything. But, you know, who knows? She was quite an adventurer in her heyday.
How long have you been in this chicken house?
Ooh, I got it. What time system do you all use in the material plane?
Not DR, but...
Oh, yeah. I guess probably like 2 months your time?
No.
Yeah, so not super long. And I've been pretty busy. So, you know, because I'm busy and have a lot of business that I do. So...
Speaking of your business, what brought you to our camp in the first place? What are you? Were you on a bounty or?
Yeah, no. I heard some creatures from the Blossom Court have been fleeing the war, so there's just kind of a general bounty out on that. So I was hunting around, and I found, you know, your friend had disappeared. And honestly, I mean, meeting you all was just an accident, but you know, you were all desperate enough to come with me, and you lived, so that's better than I can say for most mortals I've encountered. Which is why you're hired.
Oh, so nice. All right.
Well, I'm gonna finish this dinner.
Yeah. For sure. I guess I'll just. I'm fine with whatever is happening there. I'm just gonna go up to my room, and like I said, don't ever bother me when I'm in there, and don't piss off Gordon.
Fair.
Especially until you're bonded to the house. I honestly don't know if he can hurt you before that point, so...
Oh, God.
Just keep an eye out, I guess, for pumpkins, vines. Sometimes he can appear in squash. So maybe just avoid all vegetables.
Vegetables. She turns and, like, walks away, adding it to her list.
Yeah, I don't. Okay, well, I'm gonna go to sleep. Don't do any. We're heading right now to Coven. Oh, Gordon, take us to Coven. And you see the fireplace like whooshes up and glows a variety of rainbow colors.
Don't go to sleep yet because I'm gonna cook for you.
Oh no, that's okay. I'm really tired, so I should just, you know,
dinner
it's late,
will be
so.
In an hour.
No, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna just. She's walking upstairs and don't bother me. Like I said, I'm gonna go.
Oh, don't worry. We know not to disturb a growing girl.
Ha ha. Right. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye. And you hear a thunk of wood and then a shh of a deadbolt and a shh of another deadbolt from up the stairs.
Cool. Now that the weirdos are gone, Tony, like... jumps over the couch and just like starts strumming on her guitar.
Any dietary restrictions at all?
Nah.
Now I guess the mead doesn't matter anymore, so I guess I'm just making whatever I want at this point.
Rook took the mead up, for sure, yeah. with her to her room.
Oh, I'm a vegetarian.
Okay, perfect. Finally.
Standing in this beautiful culinary kitchen, you all hear a, ha-ha, we're gonna have so much fun together, comes from one of the pumpkins on the mantle.
And that's where we're gonna end tonight's episode! Oh, fun!
I got really excited when I heard about a jack-o'-lantern, you know, household companion, and now I'm really creeped out.
He's the worst.
Well, some days he's probably really cool.
As long as you wipe your boots off.
Yeah, maybe if you get to know him a little bit better and respect his rules. Mm-hmm. Everything will be fine.
We got that. We're on that.
I hope, like, a year from now, our Halloween adventure is that Gordon got out.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Don't do that. Y'all know I'm a fan of the Garth Nix novels, so Gordon, some Mogget, who knows?
Oh my god, I love Mogget!
Yes, well, thank you all so much for being here, for joining us for episode 5 of the podcast. Things are really kicking off! We're gonna get into, the town of Kevin. We're gonna go full on into the wilds and really kick some bounty hunting off, so... I'm so stoked to have you all here. But before we end things tonight, we've got something to do, one of our special moments here. So we are going to have a flashback scene, which is the first time we've done this, but this is one of our options. It's either going to be a flashback scene, a letter, or a dream. So before I let you all go, Aoife, I want to explore a moment that has happened with you. When you were about 8 years old, so about 8 years ago in the context of this. And this is one of those nights where your parents have been back for quite a while on one of their longer visits. You know, their routine visits they do where they come home and they get to visit. But tonight, or I guess this morning, is when they're scheduled to leave. Really, really early in the morning. That's always how they do it. They sneak out before everybody wakes up. They say, you know, have a big night, say their goodbyes. So you're 8 years old at this point. How many of your siblings have been born by now? You're probably not the, you know, the eldest of 5 or 6 at this point.
Definitely not yet. I think at 8 years old, I think she has her one younger sister who is 2 years younger than her. Her younger sister Soisha, and so what Aoife does every time she gets to see her parents is like she will sit up like as a guard at the door and like so that she can, you know, try and stop them from leaving, but always what inevitably happens is she falls asleep and is curled into a ball onto the ground just like in front of the door. And her parents, like, her dad always has to pick her up and, like, we'll put her, like, back onto, like, the couch and tuck her in with the blanket.
Yeah, so it's one of those mornings, and I think you've been through this a few times now. So what is it like? What is the general, you know, when your parents are visiting, what does that time period look like for your household?
Definitely, they always come back with a bag full of just like odds and ends and toys and like weird things that they've like picked up from their travels. And her mom would always like try and do like quick sketches of some like interesting things that they saw. So they're like almost like a little postcard. And her dad keeps a journal, and so every time that they set out, he buys a new one, and when they come back, he gives it to her so that she can read all about his adventures and remember them while they're gone. And so she's, you know, always has those to look forward to.
Yeah, so it's been a wonderful visit. And I think you've been through it enough now that you're 8. You know, at least 3 or 4 of these where they go, they come back, they spend a couple of weeks, and then they go again. And you're always happy to see them. You're used to that regularity. It's always hard, but your family has made a big effort to make it joyful. I think your grandparents have always been really encouraging about your parents' artistic pursuits. And that's why you also have been able to grow up. So the expectation was always you were going to find your own path, just like your parents did. And whatever was required would be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those integral kind of journeys for you as you're 8 years old and you find yourself, you've had a wonderful night with your parents. They've given you their final parting gifts, and you tried your hardest, your very, very hardest, to stay awake through the night. But as you are snuggled into, you know, a knitted handmade afghan in this corner of this big cozy couch, it's maybe 4 a.m., 5 a.m. when you are bolted awake by the sounds of people loading something into their wagon just outside of your house. And you know, like, oh, this is the moment. This is the moment your parents are leaving. What do you do?
I think, yeah, she, like, having that, like, one last opportunity, she knows that because, like, the front door that where everyone actually comes, like, there's, like, the front door, then there's the back door that immediately goes into the kitchen. And the back door is the one that the family, like, actually uses. Like, no one actually uses right. The front door whatsoever.
No, it's way too fancy. It's always locked. It's a pain in the ass.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, exactly. It gets jammed. And so she runs to that back door into that kitchen, and she, like, hops up onto the bench that's right underneath this window, and she's like just barely able to pull herself up so that she can look out, and you know, she sees her parents hopping into the back of a colorful covered wagon.
Yeah, and you see that moment right there, you know, where your parents, they've loaded up like their trunks and their instruments, and they're hanging out at the back of that wagon now, and they're talking to two people. That you can see. There are a bunch of different people moving around. Your parents always are with a bunch of people. That's just sort of the life of entertainers. You've seen different people come and go. They're always colorful. They're always interesting. But these two really stand out to you this time for whatever reason. You see two figures about equivalent in height, maybe 5'7", 5'8". Both very tall and lean. One is a tiefling with brownish skin and teal hair, golden eyes, and this long coat that seems to be talking to your parents. And the other is a figure who is completely covered in costuming at this point. You can see there is no piece of their skin that is exposed. They wear a mask over their face, head to toe, with a lot of, like, diamond harlequin patterns that are honestly incorporated in both of their garb. And they seem to be talking to your parents in this moment. And the figure who has the mask on stands to attention as you look out on this scene and turns their gaze very sharply towards you. And you know, even though it's hard to tell from this distance and they are wearing a mask, that they are looking directly at you. And this figure pulls up a finger and kind of arches it.
And she kind of like ducks her head beneath the wall. And then I imagine she would hear from the other side of the door, kind of like her mom laugh, knowing that like, oh, someone,
oh,
guess who's awake. Yeah.
You definitely, yeah, you hear both your parents kind of mutter, and there's like a happy, like a laugh exchange that happens between these four people, as clearly everyone has noticed that this person has noticed.
Yeah, and so she creaks open the door very slowly, and she does a thing where she waits for a second, and then she does that little kid run where she goes and she like clamps onto her parents' legs.
Yeah, and your dad is waiting there, Kiernan, as you just run in, and he like automatically throws his arms around you and lifts you up on his hip, making the "ooh" sound, you know, that dads do when they pretend you're so much heavier than you are. And your mom, Rosalind, is standing there too, just shaking her head like, of course you're awake. And you can tell that the tiefling woman, who you've never met, you don't know her name, she's a little bit uncomfortable, I guess, around this kid family situation. So she's hanging back a little bit. But this masked figure looks at you and says, "Little one, what is your name?"
"My name's Aoife."
"Aoife. That's a good name. You know, I'm the person who sends your parents away quite a lot. I hope you don't hate me too much for that."
"Oh, well, it's like what we always say, that if you follow your dreams, then there will be people who are good and nice who will support you. And at the end of the day, it's just that we love each other that matters. So, I mean, as long as you're being safe and that my parents get to come home, I understand."
"You're a good kid. And I think you'll do great. As long as you keep that and you believe that. But I'm sorry to take up so much of your parents' time, and I promise I wouldn't do it unless it was really important. Your parents are doing something really important. You understand that?"
You can just see her big, doughy eyes are beaming as she is just so filled with pride and is just like, and like clings even like tighter to her dad. And you can start to see these big kind of tears well up in her jewel eyes. And she says, I, yeah.
Yeah. And your dad, you know, ruffles your already frizzy, messed up hair from sleeping on the couch for, you know, the last 3 hours. And this figure, they say, "Well, let me tell you what. I'm going to give you something really, really special. So just in case you ever get worried or you need your parents, if you need to reach them, this little bird will know how to find me. Wherever you are, so as long as you have this, your parents are never too far away." They open their hand and you see a tiny little blackbird, a rook, one might say, carved from obsidian. They hand to you.
Oh, and she, like, takes it and just with this utmost reverence and scoops it so delicately into her, like, tiny little, like, baby fingies. And, like, this thing is, like, for as small as her hands are, practically takes up her whole, like, grasp. And she just, like, pulls it to her chest, like, so, so tight.
"I'll take good care of it. What's your name?"
"I'm Chess. It's good to meet you, Aoife."
"Oh, Chess, I like that game. I've been trying to learn it. I think I'll call this bird Bishop."
"You do that, Aoife." And with that, your parents give you final squeezes, hugs, say their final goodbyes, and roll off once again. My question for you, Aoife, now, as a 16-year-old, do you still have that little black bird?
"Oh, absolutely. She does. She keeps it in a very particular place within her, like, main sort of sewing kit box. She has, like, a, like, basically, like, a cigar box stuffed inside of that inside she has some of her favorite entries from her dad's journals over the years, because she hasn't been able to carry them all. And when she left home for the first time, she didn't want to carry them all and wanted to make sure that they could still be at home and stay safe. But she tore out her favorite ones from over the years that she could continue to read. And there's a sketch that her mom did of their whole family the last time that they were all together. And there is this little obsidian bird that is, like, very lovingly nested into a piece of her favorite, like, shimmery sort of, like, green satin fabric."
Yeah. So that's something else we know about Aoife, that her parents are never too far away. And that's really where we're going to end our episode for today. So thank you, everybody,
so much. I have been your dungeon master, Celeste Gonowich.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I've been playing Luveri's Staff, your drow rogue.
I'm Nassim. I've been your half-orc fighter, Tony Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and I have been your sweet, sweet, sweet bard, Aoife Flannery.
Sweet baby bard, Aoife Flannery. God, thank you again so much for being here. Before we go, I'm going to read out the names of our wonderful Patreon donors. If you enjoyed the show, we do have a Patreon, which is a wonderful way. If you even laughed, smiled, enjoyed this even just a little bit, you can go over to our Patreon and contribute $1 a month, $5 a month, more, a one-time donation. All proceeds of Patreon go to help grow the show, including, you know, making an awesome campaign book, bringing us back for campaign 2, bringing us that awesome intro that you saw at the beginning, upgrading our audio quality or visual quality. So if you enjoy the show, please do consider donating via Patreon. These people are wonderful, and they've already done that. So let's go around and say thank you. I'm going to say thank you to Cody Becker at Cody Rolls 4 on Twitter.
I'm going to say thank you to Debbie and her super cute puggies.
And I always got to say thank you to Curry.
And you know what's up? The Muffin Man at the one on Drury Lane, of course, on Twitter.
And thank you so much to Nisa McKinnon.
And to Richie113 from our Discord.
And from our Farrah's Drinking Mate tier, Ruby. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Everybody who donates, you really, really do keep the lights on for the show. The people who donate at this level, just incredible. We could not be here and doing all of this without all of you. So head on over to the Patreon. Just check out the goodies you can get there. You can get an entire Rime of the Frostmaiden campaign in audio form. You can get coloring book pages every month. You can get DM notes, GM notes, player notes, all kinds of really, really good shit. Magic items. It's also good. So you rock. I love it. Anything else we had to take care of business-wise?
If you love horse girl energy, there's now a Tony coloring book page on our Patreon.
Go to the Patreon. $1 a month.
It's magnificent. I'm really excited for the eventual coloring pages of our bedrooms, too. So check those out when they come.
Yes. Please. Let's please bring it. All right. You all rock. You all rock our socks. So until next time.
Venture away!